I told Kevin this morning, I just hope our service today goes better than the dream I had about it last night. Anyone ever have those dreams? And so you notice we're working for the first time on purpose. We were hoping, oh, we can get some sun and heat, and how does that affect the cameras, though? Did not consider that. So sorry if you're online and you're like, well, I can't see. We're trying to figure it out with this sun here. So we're in the third week of our series, We Belong, and we've talked about our belonging to God and to one another. And so I just want to, we need to remember this, we need to remind each other of this. So if you just repeat after me, we belong. We belong to God. We belong to one another. We belong to creation. And that's our message today, that we belong to creation. And I'm going to offer a text this morning that may not be feel like the most hopeful at the outset, but it's going to illustrate this point. It's from Genesis chapter 6, and we're going to read just a few verses here. It's the story of Noah. It says, "Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw that the earth was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted its ways upon the earth. And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. Now I am going to destroy them along with the earth." And he goes on to tell Noah, but here's what you're going to do. You're going to, you know, build this ark. And he gives him instructions. And then he says, "For my part," this is God, "For my part, I am going to bring a flood of waters on the earth to destroy from under heaven all flesh in which is the breath of life. Everything that is on earth shall die, but I will establish my covenant with you. And you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you, and every living thing of all flesh. You shall bring two of every kind into the ark and to keep them alive with you." And our next scripture is from the book of Romans, Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 8, beginning in verse 18. Paul writes, "I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory about to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the children of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not of its own will, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to decay and will obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning in labor pains until now, and not only the creation, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly while we wait for adoption, the redemption of our bodies." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. We tend to have some different kinds of relationships with the creation. And while, you know, I think sometimes we might go to, you know, Wildwood or walk the Pinkley Trail and just, you know, soak it all in and enjoy it and appreciate it, I think if we look around and through much of human history, at least in some cultures, our relationship has been one of the controller or the conqueror of creation. And as the controller or conqueror, we want to so tame creation that it doesn't affect us, that we can just live our lives without having to worry about the chaos and the unpredictability and the power of creation. And I can tell you that one of my least favorite things in the world is, like last week, when we had rain in the forecast for Sunday morning, and that it started coming into the forecast around Wednesday, and I'm having to figure out, we're having to figure out, okay, are we going to do church on Sunday? Are we not going to do worship on Sunday? I don't like that. I don't like to be affected by the weather. I don't like to be affected by the whims of creation. And most of us don't. And so we build houses and we have temperature-controlled houses. You know, we usually are, you know, somewhere within, I don't know, like 63 and 72, right? At all times in my house, it seems like. And we can do that because we don't want to be affected. We want to have control over our lives. We don't want to have to shift or adapt to the weather around us. We want to avoid that as much as possible. So one of our relationships to the creation is the controller or the conqueror. We don't want to have to worry about it. The other is the consumer, of course. We look around at the world and ask, okay, how can this profit us? How can this bring us pleasure? How can we use this for power? How can we wield this for power? And in both cases, we are trying to relate to the creation as something separate from it. That we are other than creation. That we're in control and we can engage it then on our terms. And I think what we see in both of these texts, in Genesis and in Romans, is that we are inextricably linked to the creation. What we do affects the creation. What is going on in the creation affects us. And in fact, much of the story is that, and especially the flood story, is that how we live affects what happens around us. Did you notice the emphasis on the earth? The earth was corrupt. The earth was filled with violence. We'd corrupted with our ways. We'd brought corruption to the earth. And that's a major theme in the Noah story. And this truth flies in the face of that separatist myth that we tell ourselves, that we are other than creation. That creation is ours to control and consume. That separatist myth that justifies using and consuming creation with impunity. We have never, as human beings, been separate from creation. We've been made holy by God. And sometimes holy can mean separate or other or different. But it's always been not a separate from, but a separate for. God has made us holy not so we can be just wash our hands and say, I don't have to worry about creation, I'm not connected to it. But holy for creation, that we would be cultivators and people who care for and reign over creation with wisdom and love, like God does. We even come from creation. The scriptures make that clear. In Genesis 2, we have this image of God taking the dust or the clay from the earth and shaping it. He says, we're part of creation. And then God, the creator, breathes life. And so we are both. We're kind of this intersection of the creation, the dust of the earth, and the creator's breath within us. And so I think that's why, as we look through the scriptures, that when there's human corruption and social injustice, it so often seems to stir up the elemental forces of the planet. So we have the flood, right? It's not just like, oh, we affect each other and you know, there's violence and so this person affects this person, but the whole creation, the floodwaters come. Or in Egypt, when Pharaoh and the Egyptians are oppressing the Hebrew people and they say, God says, okay, go and say, let my people go. And then Pharaoh doesn't. And then what happens? The creation breaks loose, right? With locusts and darkness and all of the plagues. We see the creation almost revolting. And even when Jesus dies on the cross, we see the earth shaking. There's like an earthquake and darkness covers the face of the land. And so we shouldn't be surprised that creation then would revolt when our relationship with it is controller or consumer, that eventually it would revolt, not consciously, but in response to the ways that we have overproduced and overconsumed and overviolenced. Our lifestyle is too often the lifestyle of Adam and Eve, taking, as though everything were there to be taken on our terms, to bring us pleasure and fulfill our desires according to our analysis and assessment, rather than received as a gift in the wisdom of our Creator. So how many of you are Sandlot fans? The movie Sandlot? You've seen the Sandlot movie? Okay, a few of you. There's this scene where, you know, of course, they're trying to get their home run ball signed by Babe Ruth from the dog, the beast. And they don't know how to do it. So they set up all these vacuum cleaners, and they're going to suction this ball up from the ground on the other side of the fence, and they do that, but then the beast, of course, bends the tube, the vacuum tube. And what's happening, you see that the vacuum cleaners in the treehouse start shaking and shaking and shaking, and they're being overworked, and they can eventually, they explode. And my favorite scene is when the one kid comes out and he's like covered in dust and dirt because it's exploded all over him. And that's what happens when we overproduce and overconsume and overwork the creation and push it past its limits, push it past the wisdom of God. We don't see it as a gift, but as a right or an entitlement. Now, that's not to say that creation is an instrument that God uses to punish us. It can seem like that sometimes, but that was never creation's intent, and it's not God's character. It's more that the creation reverts to chaos when its rightful rulers reign in ways that are inconsistent with its design. So we see right in Genesis 1 that God endows the creation with a kind of agency, almost a personality, if you will, it seems. It's the creation that is to bring forth the trees and continue to bring forth animals and creatures. And then we see the creation groaning. It's this image of the creation groaning in Romans 8. And I don't want to read too much into these little verbs in the flood story, but I just want us to notice when the flood comes, we know it's from God, but it really seems like it's the creation acting. So if we look at Genesis 7, verse 6, it says Noah was 600 years old when, it doesn't say here that God sent flood water. It says he was 600 years old when the flood of waters came on the earth. And then in verse 11, it says, in the 600th year of Noah's life, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep burst forth and the windows of the heaven were opened. So it seems it's almost like the creation is the actor in these texts. The flood continued for 40 days, and the waters increased and bore up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters swelled and increased. And so it's the creation acting throughout this story. And then there's a shift in chapter 8. Listen to this. But God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and all the domestic animals. And God made a wind blow over the earth, and the water subsided. Do you hear the difference? God is the very clear actor in restraining the creation. And that's actually the picture we get of God in Genesis 1. It's not so much of, in Genesis 1 at least, of God just bringing things out of nothing, but God is the one who is ordering the chaos. He starts with chaos and wildness, and he pushes it aside and restrains it up here to make it conducive to human life and flourishing. It's okay. They'll get in. They'll get in. Don't worry. All right. But you see the picture of God here. There's the kind of naturally chaotic and wild creation. And then there's God restraining it so that we can live and thrive and flourish. And so, what seems to be God's judgment is really a kind of releasing of creation back to chaos. It's almost like, okay, if you want to live this way, if you want to have your way on this earth, this is what it looks like. If you want to do it on your own, if you want to have your own relationship outside of my wisdom for creation, then here's the chaos that's going to ensue. If I move my hand and stop restraining the waters and the earth from doing their thing. And so there is an accountability built into the created order. And when we don't listen to the creation's whispers, the whispers become shouts. And when we don't listen to the shouts, they become shakes. And then when we don't listen to the shakes, it can become what seems to us violence. And we look around right now, and we see what's happening as wildfires rage, and ice caps melt, and species disappear. We have denied our link to creation for too long. We have tried to be the controller, the conqueror, the consumer for too long. We've neglected our covenant. We've neglected our covenant with creation. Enough bad news? Can we move on? maybe, to some hope? Because I think there is hope. And the way of restoration, when we think about our relationship with the creation, is the way of Jesus. Shocker, I know. But we're going to go back to Jesus' baptism. And there's a Mennonite theologian named Ched Myers who notices that when Mark describes Jesus' baptism, he uses it may not seem strange to us, but it's not the word you might expect if you were a Greek speaker, that Jesus is baptized into the Jordan River. And he says, we need to realize that Jesus was also being empowered, not just from above, from the dove from above, but also through a deep and full spiritual immersion into his beloved homeland from below, so to speak. He says these prepositions, the into prepositions, articulate that before launching his campaign of resistance to the principalities and powers that would define his ministry, Jesus sought grounding. He began not with a consciousness of alienation. What he's saying is Jesus didn't like just go and pretend he wasn't linked to the creation. He had to go into this spiritual place apart and find himself and find his ministry. He says, no, no, no. He doesn't focus on what he's against, but an experience of identification, focusing on what he was for. That when Jesus goes into the water, he's saying, he's identifying with it. He's acknowledging that link, that inextricable link to God, to humanity, and to the creation itself. That's where he begins his ministry, by entering into a covenantal relationship with the world, not a consumer or controller relationship. And so what does that mean for us? It means that following the way of Jesus means putting less value and energy into consumption and more into communion. What does it look like to live in communion, in a relationship of mutual love and respect and care, like we would expect us to live with one another or with God? What would it look like for us to live with that kind of relationship with creation? A relationship of communion rather than control and consumption. I think it also stems from the belongings we've already discussed. One of the reasons we hoard creation and try and gather it and use it more and try and get as much of it out of it as we can, suck as much out of it as we can, is because, one, we don't trust our link with God, our provider. We don't believe that God will provide. And so we try and gather as much as we can for ourselves just in case. And we don't trust our links and our belonging to one another. We're afraid that if we don't have enough, that no one's going to be their brother's keeper or sister's keeper when it comes to us. And so if no one's going to care for us, if God isn't going to provide for us, and if we can't rely on anyone else to give us what we need when we're struggling, then we got to get it for ourselves. We got to consume it. We got to hoard as much as we can. And we see where that leads us. And then finally, we need to hold accountable individuals and corporations who can only relate to creation in a transactional way based on profit and not as covenant partners. Because friends, we can recycle all we want, and that's good, but we got to look at the big picture here. Because I am not individually taking all the oil and all of the resources from the earth. It happens on a large scale, and we have to find ways of reducing that if we are going to be our brother and sister's keeper, if we are going to care for creation and have covenant relationship with it, and if we don't want it to revolt against us. It takes more than just throwing the can in the recycle bin. It's a justice thing. We need to use our voices. We just watched The Lorax. You guys know The Lorax? I speak for the trees. We had that bill of rights for Lake Erie. Maybe it wasn't perfect. Maybe it won't do anything, but it got passed. And I think there's something symbolic in that of, like, someone needs to speak for the creation. Someone needs to listen for the whispers of what's going on and what it's saying, what God is saying to us about it, and to say, this isn't okay. This isn't good for us. This is our destruction, not just the world's destruction. And so we need to get back to the relationship that God designed. And God tells Adam and Eve, he says, I want you to serve and keep this land. And interestingly, though, it's those same words that God tells the priests and the Levites in the temple. He says, serve and keep. That's our relationship. It's to look around and say, this whole creation, I love being outside. I know some of you are cold today. I love worshiping outside. I get to see all of it. This creation is this God's sanctuary. This is where we experience God. Here around us are the materials that we use to love other people and to create things. How do we treat it like a temple where God's presence dwells, where we experience God? Because the creation, friends, will not always groan. It's the images of creation are not just of groaning and destruction. The images we have in some places in the scriptures are of trees clapping their hands and mountains breaking forth with shouts of joy, and the whole creation experiencing the freedom and the liberation when the children of God live as children of God. When we are reconciled to the likeness of Christ and reign with him in wisdom, peace, and joy. And so we belong. We belong to God. We belong to one another. We belong to the creation. May we revel and rejoice in all of those good, inextricable links that God has made us with. Let's sing together in praise as we approach this table.